This is 1A. I'm Jen White. We start the week in a place that feels far too familiar, with another mass shooting, this time in Buffalo, New York, and with the country once again reeling from a hate crime motivated by racism and allegedly carried out by a young white man who appears to have been radicalized online. The Center for Countering Digital Hate is an international group that seeks to disrupt the architecture of online hate and misinformation. Its CEO is Imran Ahmed, who joins us now from Washington, D.C. Imran, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
So you've been clear that it's a mistake to describe these as lone wolf attacks. Why?
Well, I think it's really important to remember that attacks like the one in Buffalo have a lineage going back to the Tree of Life synagogue attack in Pittsburgh, in which Jews were massacred, to Christchurch in New Zealand, where a terrorist attack was carried out on Muslims, and El Paso, Texas, where Latinos were murdered in the United States. And all of them are motivated by a variation of something called the Great Replacement Theory, one of the big strands in white supremacist ideology today.
You know, we've seen other countries crack down on the systems that allow hate speech to flourish online. There's the Online Safety Bill in the UK, the Digital Services Act in the European Union, to name just a couple of examples. Is there the political will to do anything similar here in the US?
Well, I mean, other countries are seeking to act because what we've become aware of over the past 2 years is that these individuals are not lone wolves. They're connected through online communities on social media where they share ideas, they share tactics, they share content, radicalizing content, they fundraise, they organize, they mobilize, and they encourage each other. In 2019, the governments of the world came together alongside Meta, Twitter, and Google with the Christchurch call to eliminate terrorist and violent extremist content online, saying that they'd be resolute in their commitment. And yet the social media companies we have been finding over time, governments have been realizing, are failing to do their bit. And so you are seeing legislation being passed around the world. Now, just a few weeks ago, my own organization, the Center for Countering Digital Hate, published a report showing that, you know, 3 years after that statement, when the platforms receive reports of rate replacement content on their websites, 9 out of 10 times, they do nothing. And so we are seeing a growing swell of action, of encouragement for there being legislation in place. And also, I think really importantly, a framework for global action so that we're not actually just acting as individual states, as individual countries, that there are minimum standards that we establish that we can stop jurisdiction shopping these big companies that are very flexible and where they have their tax bases, where they have their jurisdictional base, able to skip between jurisdictions to avoid being held to account.
What evidence is there that the kind of legislation you're describing makes a difference?
Well, there's no evidence because we haven't tried it yet. Mm. I mean, extraordinarily, in 1996 was the last time we passed any substantial legislation in the United States for regulating internet companies, social media, for example. And I mean, that was actually the Communications Decency Act 1996, one small section of it, Section 230. And what that did was actually immunize internet companies, internet content platforms, from any liability for content that's produced by a third party. So basically it means that you can run a platform, accrue lots of content into one space, monetize that content to enormous success, as we've seen with Facebook, for example. Mark Zuckerberg is worth $100 billion off the back of taking other people's content and monetizing it. And it gives him legal impunity for any ramifications for the social cost of that content. It could be terrorist content. It could be content that makes a young girl feel terrible about her body. It might be pro-anorexia content. Or as we've seen in the last year and a half, it might be the sort of content that persuades people not to take a vaccine and die as a result. So we are seeing people trying to put legislation in place to, as with normal regulations, that companies bear part of the cost of the harms being produced on their platform in order to disincentivize them from doing so. We have no evidence it would work in social media, but we know from regulating lots of other industries, that's just the normal way that we do business.
We're speaking to Imran Ahmed. He's the CEO at the Center for Countering Digital Hate. That's an international group that's working to tackle the platforms and systems that spread online hate and misinformation. Well, Imran, your group has a particular interest in the online media ecosystem. How different is that space from some of the voices that are popular on cable TV, for instance, here in the U.S.?
Well, I think they're part of a collective ecosystem that seeks to, and let's not forget, cable television platforms are also commercial platforms. They have seen an audience emerge primarily on social media, interestingly. And so social media has created the audience, has allowed for the proselytization of misinformation and hatred to thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. Not just hatred, but the precursors of hatred, the misinformation that underpins making, and it takes a lot of misinformation to make someone feel that the right thing to do is to go and massacre innocent people. And so we have seen some really cynical people seek to monetize the same audience for themselves on cable TV. There are, and not just that, but also politicians who think that this could be a vote winner for them in their narrow race or in their primary. And it is, of course, incredibly depressing, because what we're seeing is social media driving malignancies in offline society as well, a broader extension of the harm that social media is doing to our media, our discourse, our politics.
So when you talk about holding these companies accountable for the information proliferating on their sites, what would that accountability look like? Is it economic? Is it financial accountability or something else?
Well, I think it has to be financial accountability. Look, in the end, Andrew Bosworth, who's the chief technology officer of Meta, a few years ago wrote to his fellow employees on their internal messaging board a memo entitled "The Ugly Truth," which is about the economics that underpin their platform. And in it, he said, "We connect people. That can be bad if they make it negative. Maybe someone dies in a terrorist attack coordinated on our tools. But still, we connect people." And it is quite simply, in one respect, a very bold and honest statement of personal indifference and corporate indifference to the grief that is felt by people, families, our nation today at the harm created by social media platforms, because the fundamental economic drivers for those platforms are if they take content down, they reduce the amount of content they've got to monetize. They have to take an action, which means another cost for them. So there's a dual disincentive. And on the other side, in terms of the actual harms that are created in society, they're immunized by Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. So there is a perverse disincentive. In fact, ironically, a fiduciary, in terms of their duty as executives of the company, it is their duty to not moderate as much because of the core logic that underpins current US regulation. It's time for us to just to stop that and to stop giving them a special get out of jail free pass and bring in economic consequences for the harms that they create, asking them to bear some of the burden. Opening them up to potential criminal and civil liabilities if they act in an unreasonable way. Essentially, we're asking them to be subject to what everyone else in the United States and every company is subject to, negligence law.
And we're planning to talk more about this tomorrow on the show, and it can be tempting, considering that the volume and frequency of these attacks, to believe nothing is going to change. How does your group convince people change is possible, even with what feels like an absence of political will to pass comprehensive legislation around guns or even moderating online content?
Well, I mean, it helps that I'm an intrinsically positive and optimistic person who believes that human beings are wonderful and that we do find ways collectively to solve the harms of our society. That's the lesson, that's the true lesson of history, is that, generally speaking, things get better. But look, this for me started only 6 years ago when my own colleague, Joanna Cox MP, a mother of two, a member of parliament in the UK, was murdered by an extremist who'd been radicalized during the EU referendum online. And she was shot, stabbed, and beaten to death by this man. And it was at that point that I realized that something was terribly wrong in these online spaces, that hate actors were able to act with impunity and build these communities and radicalize people and cause enormous harm. And it's taken us time to work out what the solutions are. But, we know that governments have been coming to the same realization. Just this Thursday, we're holding a conference in Washington, D.C., of legislators from the UK, Canada, US, Australia, New Zealand, and the EU, and civil society. My colleagues like Rashad Robinson from Colour of Change are coming along, and others as well, to talk about, well, what can we do? What are we doing in our individual countries? How can we start to take action so that social media acts in a responsible way and that it actually upholds the community standards that we all sign when we join those platforms? And I think with that incremental action, with first of all, building the awareness, second, building the resolve for action, and third, taking that action, seeing how it goes, and then taking further action if necessary, we can start the process of legislating and regulating and starting to make social media, which is such a wonderful thing at its core. The idea of connecting people, allowing us to build community beyond geography, to maintain relationships even when we're not able to see people in person, to be closer to each other, to make the real experience that we have online, rather than the malignancies that infect it right now and sully it for
Okay.
so many.
That's Imran Ahmed. He's the CEO at the Center for Countering Digital Hate. That's an international group working to tackle the platforms and systems that spread online hate and misinformation. Imran, thanks for speaking with us. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.